Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. John Cozy is on today. John is a retired philosophy professor. He comes on the program regularly. He writes marvelous articles on social, political, and economic issues. He taught for many years. He's been writing for many more. I love it when John sends me a new article. I look forward to reading it. I look forward to John coming on the program so we can talk about it. He writes about democracy and related issues in his main one. It was posted on Global Research. John, before we begin, can I do one thing?
Sure.
Global Research posts for you regularly. It also does for me, and it's such an invaluable resource. Michelle Chosudovsky, the editor, asked me if I would write a short commentary about Global Research, and I did, and I sent it to him just a short time ago. I suggested please edit it freely. He'd like to use it as a way to tell people more about the site and to promote the fact that Global Research is independent. No deep pockets support independent operations, whether they're audio, video, or online, and Global Research combines all of the above. Let me just read what I wrote. It struck me that it would be a good idea to begin the program this way. It's not too long. I sent it to him. He may change it slightly, and I wasn't certain just how much he wanted. So I tried to put enough in so I didn't say too little, but I didn't want to make it an article because that could go on forever. But this is what I said. I titled it Global Research, an Essential News, Information, and Analysis Resource. It absolutely is that. And I started off saying, reader support keeps it operating. It's vitally needed. Please contribute what you can. Any amount, large or small, helps. No online resource does it better. It's in a class by itself. Award-winning Center for Research on Globalization, economics professor, founder, director, and author, Michelle Chosudovsky, deserves full credit. On September 9th, I made a mistake. He's got to correct it. I'll send him an email afterwards. I put down on September 9th, 2001, he established Global Research, GR, I said. 2 days later, 9/11 accelerated another century of war. That's no exaggeration. Financial, political, and hot ones rage. Washington wages them globally. They persist without end. They destroy democracy, institutionalize state terror, force-feed repression, and escalate economic decline. U.S. leaders threaten humanity. They head America and other countries for tyranny and ruin. Global Research reports what readers most need to know. It's true. I just can't imagine letting a day go by without my going there and checking out material on the site that's fresh and new and vital. It's also independent. It covers vital world issues. It's dedicated to truth and full disclosure. Sunshine is the best disinfectant. You betcha it is. Topics include political, economic, social, military, strategic, environmental, America's war on terror, and others. Virtually everything important is covered. GR radio, television and radio supplement posted articles. New material appears daily. To keep operating, Global Research needs reader support. It depends on the contributions to sustain operations. Please contribute what you can. Independent operations like Global Research can't function without them. Given today's grave economic, political, and social climate, it's more than ever important to keep GR reporting daily. Doing so assures vital information, vital news, information, and analysis on what everyone most needs to know. And there isn't a word in what I wrote that I don't believe is absolutely true. And if I didn't believe it, I wouldn't have written it, and I wouldn't have said it on air. There you go, John.
Yeah, I wrote one, too, not as long as yours. But I agree 100%. I'm trying to find what I wrote, but I can't find it.
That's wonderful if Michelle is going to put up a number of them. Anybody can go to Global Research if they're not familiar with the site. Just Google Global Research. I mean, that's what I do.
Yeah.
I Google
yeah.
Global Research, could take yeah. you right to the site.
The gist of my little paragraph was that I personally believe that knowledge belongs to everyone, not just to those who discover it. And consequently, I put my pieces out on the web in places where people can access them freely. But I pointed out that regardless of that, everybody admits that publishing books and newspapers costs money, but they don't seem to realize that maintaining and hosting a website also costs money. And I'd pointed out that not only would a contribution to Global Research be that, but it would also express gratitude for what Global Research makes available to readers every day. That's basically the gist of what I wrote. It's not exactly what I wrote, because I can't find what I wrote.
I decided that I would save it in case I ever needed to use it in some way or in part, or maybe write a new version at some time in the future. So I stuck it away in my files, and I'll save it. Michelle asked me this morning. I told him I would try to get it to him today. Well, I managed to get it done in the morning and send it to him, and he can go through it as he has a chance. And it's true. I mean, it really is invaluable. It didn't dawn on me that maybe I would just read this over the year. I kind of like what I wrote because it says what I really feel. And there you go. I began the program. And I'll tell Michelle, John, that I began my program, and you were my guest, another regular Global Research contributor. And I read this on air so my listeners can hear about it. And I imagine a lot of them know about Global Research and use it as a regular resource. But not everyone knows everything. And listeners who are not familiar with Global Research, there is a big gap in your knowledge resource. You simply have to follow Global Research and the material that gets posted. It really is absolutely essential. It's the site I go to first thing every day to check material on it, and it's invaluable. I mean, if you really want to know what's going on, as far as what's on the printed page and the supplement with Global Research TV and Global Research Radio, it's crucial stuff to know. And the beginning of changing things is to understand what needs to be changed, right, John?
Yeah, but changing things is another story, of course. Yeah.
Anyway, you wrote.
I support what you wrote, completely. My own piece attacked it from a different point of view. That's all. And it's readers who already read Global Research that are going to make the majority of contributions, if they're made at all. And so consequently, I aimed my my little paragraph at them, pointing out that you get all this stuff from Global Research, and the content is free. But the website does need support for maintenance and hosting and all other that sort of thing, and consequently, I hope that they would contribute. So,
absolutely. We really, the environment that we live in today, John, it is so threatening to so many people everywhere, literally everywhere, everywhere across the world. It's the same. Some places of more concern than others. But the terror that America inflicts on a global basis, I mean, it can really strike anybody, any place, any time. And I mean, I call America unfit to live in because of the police state laws and all the rest that go on. And America's prison system, or gulag, as an apt way to describe it. It's by far the largest in the world, the largest in total, the largest per capita. It is absolutely outrageous. It's filled with thousands of political prisoners of various stripes. So many innocent people languish unjustly, and they're mostly poor, black, Latino, you know, people of color, people who don't have deep pockets to get the expensive legal counsel to get them out of trouble. And the people who commit the worst crimes of all are the ones who are free to keep doing more and more of what they have been doing. And ordinary people who do virtually nothing or actually nothing are the ones who end up behind bars in America's gulag. They're just one of the grave offenses. But so much more harms so many people. You touched on the fiscal cliff, John, in your article on democracy. Maybe you can comment on that. I sure wrote about fiscal cliff in detail. I wrote four articles on it, and earlier I wrote about it as well. And I've got another article on four more years of war coming, and I touch on fiscal cliff again in that. I mean, this is nightmarish, and if people don't understand what the hell's going on, how are they ever going to be able to do anything to change things? And their personal lives are so grievously harmed. If we don't change them, they'll never be changed.
That's right. I don't hold out much hope.
Well, you know, great battles are won with baby steps, and there have been times in U.S. history when there was some marvelous accomplishments. Unfortunately, when the energy wanes, you know, the dark forces grab hold again and they destroy everything gained, you know, like civil rights and labor rights. All those gains are entirely, they're all lost. They're all lost. It's as bad or worse as it ever was. Go back five decades. Go back to the 19th century. And it's the same crap going on today that went on then. And, I mean, it's horrible because people, you know, you think you won the war. You know, it's like grass. You cut the grass. Well, you didn't win the war. You got to go back and cut it again because it's going to grow back. It's the same with the dark forces. It'll grab every opportunity and they'll harm people on a global scale. So you have to maintain the energy. You have to stay vigilant. You have to keep fighting the good fight. And if you do it, it's amazing what can be accomplished because battles were won. If they were won before, they can be won again, John.
Well, I don't think they've ever been won. That's the gist of it, I think.
Well, compared to the way things are now, I mean we got some good labor legislation, we got civil rights legislation. I agree with you. There was a lot that was more cosmetic than real, but if you go back to the 1960s, we certainly had better civil rights, at least on the books, compared to today, with its virtually none. And in the 1950s, that was the heyday of organized labor. It literally is a shadow today of what it was then.
Well, you know, that takes me to my piece. I looked at what's going on in Congress, people at loggerheads there. I looked at what was going on in Egypt, people at loggerheads there. I thought about what was going on in Syria, people at loggerheads there. I thought about what's going on in Gaza, people at loggerheads there. And I said, you know, how do you account for all of this? And it occurred to me that things have changed. The political system has always been bad everywhere, but you know it changed significantly after Ronald Reagan was elected to the presidency of the United States. It changed the whole idea of what a political party was. Up until then, most people thought that, well, political parties were just people who wanted to do the best they could for the country and for the people in it, but disagreed over the means, that is, how to go about doing it. Ronald Reagan came along with Margaret Thatcher in England and Angela Merkel in Germany, and changed the nature of factions completely. Factions nowadays, and perhaps always, never really cared about the welfare of the people of the country or even the country itself. And, I dug enough out of the writings of the Founding Fathers to show that they realized a lot of that was true. Jefferson knew that merchants had no patriotic attachments. They would go where money was. The Founding Fathers advised us against a lot of the things that we have now institutionalized. And it occurred to me that, look, a faction nowadays, Republicans, especially the right-wing Republicans, they don't care what happens to America. They don't care what happens to American people. What they care about is a certain kind of creating a certain kind of society that fits their own beliefs and values. And if that society is created, even if America turns into a third world slumping Guatemala, it doesn't make any difference to them. They get the society right. And it occurred to me that that's exactly what Muslim extremists are doing. They don't care about people, their welfare. They don't care about countries. They want a certain kind of society that fits their beliefs. And if the society is right, well, either people will conform or they'll die. And nobody cares. And what happens is that, the whole notion of democracy has now changed. Once upon a time, it was majority rule. Well, not anymore. When you have an election nowadays, and the United States fits right into this pattern nowadays, you have an election nowadays, if you don't win, you just reject the results of the election. That's all. I wrote a piece about it 2 years ago called Demented Democracy. What did the United States do with its promoted election in Gaza when Hamas won instead of Fatah? Well, we just rejected it. And that's exactly what the Republicans in Congress are doing with the past election. They don't really care that the American people voted against all of the policies they wanted to institute. They don't give a hoot at all. They just, come up with excuses for why they lost the election. None of them have to do with policies. The Democrats got out more people in cities to vote than they had, reason to do, and had all sorts of excuses. But nobody admits that the policies are just rejected. They just reject what they don't want to accept. It's the same thing with the status quo in my writing and your writing. When I write about economists and economics, none of the economists are, that I write about, even if I send them my pieces, ever, respond. They ignore them. They reject them out of hand. That's the way the world has gotten. It's the whole idea that truth matters is baloney. It doesn't matter. The whole idea that people in control care about other people or the countries they're in control of, that's baloney. They don't care. They just care about having their way. It's a power grab. That's what's going on in Egypt when they started rejecting the Constitution even before the Constitution was written. Rejected the referendum on it even before the votes were counted. It's a sham.
Well,
I realize, I write these pieces. I think they're pretty good. I think they're argued well. I think the facts in them are right. Nobody cares.
Well, most people don't. I wouldn't say nobody, but most people. I agree with you. I agree with you. You know, if you were able to show up on what I would call scoundrel television, it's possible you could have millions of viewers, or many, many tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, who knows. And if you show up there on a regular basis, then over time you would have millions of viewers. But if you write important material on vital topics and you say things that people need to hear and understand, and they appear even on well-read online websites, the audience is small compared to what the corporate media is able to get, whether it's television, whether it's radio, whether it's print.
Oh, I don't think it would matter much, Stephen. You know why? Because people are too dumb. We have an educational system in this country that has made people, even educated people, so dumb that it's incredible. Let's talk about the gun control debate that's floating around the country right now. The National Rifle Association says we want someone with a gun in every school to protect the kids, okay? And I said to myself, why doesn't somebody ask this guy to take a to go to a psychiatrist and get a psychological profile to see if he would be suitable to buy a gun? You know, we want background checks to buy a gun. Why background checks? Why not make them come with a certificate from a licensed psychiatrist saying this guy has no violent tendencies? And why don't we make them do it every 5 years, like we do with driver's licenses?
John, I'm sure the American Psychological Association would absolutely endorse that view. My God, it would be a boon for their business.
Yeah, well, it's better for them than the gun owners. And I ask myself, look, if you want to shoot up a classroom of kids, what's the easiest way to get into a school with a gun?
Just walk in.
No, even better. Get a job as a security guard.
You can display it visibly, and
yeah.
And it's supposed to give comfort to those seeing it. And
sure.
Who knows? I mean, it can be a raving lunatic. It can be a serial killer who's walking and happens to be a pedophile, and he just can't stand the sight of these kids or whatever. And
what do pedophiles do to get close to kids? Well, they become Jerry Sandusky's. They become coaches.
That's right, a priest or something.
What does a pedophile do? He becomes a priest in the Catholic Church. There's that old thing falsely attributed to Willie Sutton. Where did you go to the bank? Because that's where the money was. Why did you go into coaching? Because that's where the kids are.
Yeah, it really is true, John. And even if somebody got a clean bill of health and a psychological evaluation, a priest could end up getting a clean bill of health. You'd probably be a little less.
All sorts of people could get green bill of health. That's me. I'm just, what I'm doing is pointing out how ridiculous idea is.
Oh, yeah.
And all you have to do is think about it for 5 minutes. But there's not a damn newsman on TV, commentator or anything else, who thinks about any of this stuff for 5 minutes.
Well, I mentioned yesterday on air that after Reagan was shot over 30 years ago, we got the Brady Bill and it institutionalized background checks. Gun violence today is so much greater than it was 30 years ago. It simply does no good whatsoever.
Background checks, will only find you people who have already been in trouble.
That's
won't
right.
Find you people who are thinking about getting into trouble.
That's exactly right. That's exactly. But even if they exclude them through the normal channels to get a gun, they're a gun. I don't follow this stuff. I'm not a gun adherent, but I guess there are gun shows all over the place. Whether they're more in some places than others, I imagine so. But I don't know where they are. But anybody can walk into a gun show without an ID, a convicted felon, a serial killer, plunk down his or her money, and walk out with an assault weapon. No question.
You know why that is? You know why that is? Because a lot of people who sell guns at gun shows are just guys like you and me who have a gun they want to sell.
And I think one other reason, too, John, that, you know, the politicians talk the talk, but they really don't give a damn.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I said a little while ago. They don't care about people.
They literally don't care. They need to make it look as though they do care, but in fact, they do nothing to stop the things that they talk about. And that's why I stress in writing and once in a while on air, ignore the political rhetoric. It literally is meaningless. The only thing that has some meaning, sometimes, not often enough, are the policies that are enacted. You know, Obama says he wants peace. Well, how does he get it? He gets it by waging war. Who ever heard of waging war to get peace?
Well,
so watch what they do. Don't listen to what they say.
You know, when he was on television after the shootings at Newtown, talking about, you know, this killer, I said to myself, why doesn't somebody ask him how the kid who shot up that classroom differed from a president who has a kill list? Tell me, what's the difference?
Well, I don't know much about this kid, and there was a good article on Global Research that suggested the possibility that there was more than one gunman. There were other people that apparently left the scene in a very great hurry, and I think there were some very brief initial reports that police stopped one or maybe two people. I forget which.
Yeah, I read that article. I started to read that article, and then
about
the
Professor Tracy up on Global Research's site. It's a featured article. And,
yeah, I know, but I did not read it. It was not credible to me, and I'll tell you why it wasn't credible. Because the early reports that the newsmen had about that shooting were almost all wrong. I mean, you know, almost everything that cable news reported that day was wrong.
Well, I don't watch TV, John.
So, you know,
I have no idea what they reported because I wasn't watching.
Well,
I wasn't listening.
You know, I live in a house here where the television goes all day long. Okay. So I can't help but listen to some of it. But, you know, the news reporting was atrocious. And it really was. It was not only atrocious and wrong, it was speculative, and it was repetitive. I mean, the wrong things got reported, you know, 10 or 15 times every half hour. And so that, you know, you got into the minds of people thinking that, you know, this must be right. It was all wrong. So, you know, yeah, there was, you know, There were reports about people getting out of there real fast, but they weren't credible reports. Nobody could say anything about them. Nobody could produce somebody who saw them. It was just nonsense. So I junked that article. I junked it real fast.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. Let's take a break and we'll come right back. Maybe we can make a quick comment. A couple of years ago when this Norwegian Brevik went crazy, I think for certain there was more than one gunman there. We'll come back. I wanted to talk about a similar thing in Afghanistan. But let's take a break and we'll come right back. Welcome back on with John Cozy. John, we can talk about so much. I just wanted to mention briefly, I'm sure listeners remember a couple of years ago, this Norwegian, Brevik, who shot up the kids of the ruling party at a summer camp, killed, oh, dozens of them. I forget the exact number, dozens of them.
Yeah,
but it was absolutely impossible that one guy could have done all that. So who these other characters were and who was behind them, you know, we can have our theories. But the ruling party was sympathetic to the Palestinians, so that might have had something to do with it. The other episode that I wrote about was, it may have been the better part of a year ago now, and this one Sergeant Bales is being charged with murder, a U.S. Army sergeant in Afghanistan killed 20-odd Afghan civilians, and I wrote about it, and the evidence struck me as being overwhelming that it wasn't one U.S. soldier responsible for this. It was a whole bunch of them. It could have been a dozen, it could have been 15, it could have been 20, and the deaths occurred in villages that were too far apart for one soldier to get there that quickly on his own. So different ones were marauding in different places, and they end up killing 20, a couple of dozen or so Afghans, and only one guy was hung out to dry. Well, the moral of the story is the military or the government or whatever, they want to cut their losses. So they, when the event is too grave to cover up, they pin the blame on minimal numbers of people, ideally one, and they let the others get off scot-free. Most important are the people who order these things to be done. I mean, these soldiers just don't go out in their own patrols and say, let's kill 20 Afghans today. They are ordered by a commander to go out and do A, B, and C, and they say, yes, sir, and they go out and do it.
Well, you remember the Dreyfus case?
Oh, so long ago.
Yeah, so long ago, that's true. But, you know, nothing changes.
Nothing changes, exactly right. And things, there's a great line, it's been a while since I've used it, from Gilbert and Sullivan's HMS Pinafore, if I can remember it exactly. It says, things aren't always as they seem. Skim milk masquerades as whipped cream. That's the line. It's a great line. So you get a news report on scoundrel media, you can bet you they're lying through their teeth. They're not reporting what you most need to know. They're distorting what they are reporting. And the stuff, again, the stuff that everybody needs to know is the stuff that they'll never tell you about. And they turn truth on its head, and they get stuff that doesn't even come up to the level of bad fiction. That's how bad it is. But they keep repeating it over and over again. And most people who rely on virtually nothing but television, so-called television news, they're too dumb to realize they're being lied to.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what's wrong, you know. I mean, that's the only thing that makes what's going on in the world possible. People are kept ignorant. And, you know, you talk all you want about the educational system in America. And, you know, just think of the first paragraph of my piece. The founding fathers, at least the ones I mentioned, who never went to an American school, okay, knew more than our educated people do today. I mean, you know, you keep people in thrall by keeping them passive. Stupid. It just astounds me, you know, that well, Einstein, you know, made so many comments about human cruelty, okay? We don't have a scientist in America today, a prominent scientist in the world today, not a single one. You know, not in the National Science Foundation or anywhere else, you know, who can watch what American scientists are doing or producing and has the guts to stand up and say, hey, guys, don't you know what you're doing? Can't you see what you're doing? Not a single one of them. You know why? Because questioning authority is not part of the American educational system. Subjects are taught, even subjects that are complete lies, like economics, are taught as though they're unquestionably true. So we have all this passive population. in which nobody will speak out against the status quo, no matter what the status quo is, even if it's just, you know, science.
John, you're so right. I can remember quoting from the late Howard Zinn, who became a college professor, a very distinguished one. Was in the U.S. Army, came out, got a Ph.D., and he commented that the U.S. educational system, way back, I mean, he died at in his late 80s. He's been gone a few years now, and he was one of the first people I discovered as I began my discovery to find good people to follow who would tell me things I needed to know. And he complained about the U.S. educational system, and he said, to the highest level in U.S. education, including the doctoral level, they don't tell you the stuff that you'll only learn if you go out on your own and find it out. And he wrote the marvelous book, A People's History of the United States. I bought several copies because he kept updating it every now and then. It's the only text of its kind that became a million plus seller. I mean, to write a book full of important truths and to have it become a million plus seller is absolutely unheard of. Well, that book was the exception that proved the rule. And if anybody hasn't read that book, it certainly is worth getting the latest edition and buying it and reading it, because he covers the stuff that's never taught in schools at the highest level. And he went out and dug it up on his own and wrote the book many years ago. And then as a new president came in, he updated it every now and then. I forget how many editions there are, a good number of editions. But it's a marvelous book with marvelous information, a great resource. And if he were alive, he'd be a guest on this program. I had him on a couple of times while he was alive, but he's been gone a good while now, which is a shame, because I remember when I first heard him speak on a radio program, just a radio program by accident. I didn't know who it was. And I said, gee, this guy sounds very interesting. And then I heard him again and got to know who he was, began reading his books. And he's only one of many. They're wonderful people. But one of the things I remembered about him, John, was that he said, you can get a Ph.D. in America and you won't be taught the things that you really need to know in your own particular field. You know, if you go into science, I guess they teach you what you need to know there. But if you go into political science or history or the social sciences in general, they're not going to tell you what you need to know. How about philosophy, John? Do you get it straight there?
No.
No. Okay. Same problem. John McMurtry, who comes on this program, is a moral philosopher. I'll have to ask him that question. I bet he would say exactly the same thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know what the story is. No, you know, education is not about information. I have tried to tell people this for years. You know, if all you're getting from a school is information, you're being indoctrinated.
And that's exactly what they're doing, John.
The thing you need to get from a school that no American school promotes is the habit of asking whether or not the information you're getting makes any sense. If you don't ask that question, you don't know anything.
Oh, so true. So true. And I would add one thing, that the purpose of U.S. education to the highest levels is to make students good citizens. You know, good citizens meaning obedient, go along with your government. If the people in government say that the country is such and such, this is what we are, this is what we believe in, then a good citizen goes along with what their leaders say unthinkingly, unquestioningly, and that's the worst thing anybody can do.
Yeah.
For sure, the highest form of patriotism is dissent. I mean, to have a mind of your own and to decide what you believe is right or wrong, legally, morally, ethically, to me that's the duty of a good citizen. And to just sit back and accept what you're being told, whether it's by a teacher, by a politician, by anybody else, and if you accept it without question, then you violate your own important standard, and of course you'll pay a price for it, and you've only got yourself to blame. And unfortunately, that's what most people do. They're dismissive, they don't care, they're indifferent, and they worry more, as I say, I've said this many times, they worry more about who win a ball game than whether the security and welfare of themselves and their kids and their entire family is well taken care of, which in most cases is not so.
Oh, well, I've lost track of what we're talking about. I don't know.
Well, you mentioned the fiscal cliff. That's another very important topic. You mentioned it in your article. Want to comment on the fiscal cliff? I sure had my say on it.
There is no such thing as the fiscal cliff.
Well, that's exactly right. It's a hoax.
We went off the fiscal cliff a long time ago. The whole thing is a conservative conspiracy to reduce the federal government by not funding it. That started with good old Ronnie. Okay? This Hollywood cowboy who couldn't read, couldn't write, couldn't act, couldn't sing, couldn't dance, was a lousy governor and a worse president, is an icon in the American pantheon.
John, I lived in California for a couple of years with my family in the 1960s when he was governor, and I was so busy in our family business startup on the West Coast. It was operating on the East Coast, and I started a companion operation on the West Coast, and my wife absolutely despised Ronald Reagan. And again, I was so focused on what I was doing, putting in long hours, I didn't pay a lot of attention to what he was doing, but, I trusted my wife's judgment, but she had more time than I did, so she followed it, and she absolutely despised the guy. Oh, did she nail him right? I mean, she really nailed him on the nose. He was so destructive. I wrote a recent article on the Berkeley free speech movement. There was another issue going on that related to that movement, and I put the history briefly of that movement in my article to give it context. The article was based on UC Berkeley two alumni who were suing to get pro-Israeli activists to stop staging anti-Israeli activities like Apartheid Week, because it defamed the rights of Jewish students. And, they were taking on the First Amendment, and they sued, and they lost at the district court. It looks like they'll get nowhere with their suit. I mean, if a conservative district court turns them down, they'll get turned down all the way. But this was a suit, and this was used University of California, Berkeley, there was this free speech movement that goes back many, many years. It really began in the 1960s, but there were initiatives before that going back to the 1920s where Berkeley, a liberal community, people really standing up for their rights, so much more so than most other places of the country. Few areas did it like Berkeley did it, and it was students, it was a college faculty, and some of the alumni of the universities were people very much cut out of that mold, like Lincoln Steffens, who was a very well-known muckraker, I guess about a century ago, and the head of the commander of the Spanish Civil War, the Lincoln Brigade, the U.S. Lincoln Brigade, the commander, a man named Merriman, he was a UC Berkeley grad, and to recall the history of that movement was marvelous. But Ronald Reagan came into it because he attacked the movement, and I quoted one of his lines, awful lines to the extent that if we're going to have a bloodbath, let's get it over with. I mean, he was attacking free speech advocates who were nothing more, who were exercising their First Amendment rights, standing up for what they believed in. He sent the state police and the National Guard in against them, injured an awful lot of people. I'm not certain if anybody was killed, but a lot of people were injured. People were arrested. He brutalized them. And then it was just a short time after that I wrote, and the disease moved east. May, 1970, I have to check the date again in my article, that the Kent State massacre happened. Four Kent State students were killed by the National Guard. A bunch of others were wounded during the Nixon administration. And this is the stuff that goes on. I mean, this was back
then.
You mean to
tell me the American government killed its own citizens?
Amazing. It's hard to believe that would be so.
Yeah.
Of course, sending kids in a war zone, to me, that's an act of murder. If they don't get shot and killed or maimed in the war theaters, they'll be so emotionally crushed and harmed that their lives will never be the same again. So they come home, they're emotionally unstable, they murder their wives, all kinds of stuff happen, and there are more suicides from the kids coming back from Afghanistan, Iraq, when that was being waged, than the casualties on the ground fighting the forces there. That's how bad it is. The suicides, because these young kids can't even stand it anymore. And this stuff gets either no play at all in the major media or practically none. And if anybody's ever been in a VA hospital, I have, because once in a while I used to go there to get prescription drugs. It's such a pain in the ass, I just gave up on it. They put you through too much red tape. It's just awful. But you see the kind of people who are there. They're the ones who can't afford health care anyplace else. It's third world health care. The best you can get is for a resident to see you. And what do they know? They're just learning. You know, they're just months or a year out of school. They don't know their craft yet. And you need to pass through one of them as a gatekeeper to get them to write a prescription you bring in from your own doctor, which is what I did. And they're nice guys and they're nice women, but they've got a long way to go to gain competency. And this is the state of health care that the vets get. And I can remember when I was in the Army, and it was after Korea, but you know, even then there were the promises, we'll give you this, we'll give you that, we'll give you everything else. Well, they didn't do it then, and they certainly don't do it now. It's a horrible situation. You bet your life, John, that this government does as much harm or more to its own people as it does to most anybody anyplace else.
Look, you have to understand, you know, I wrote a piece about this, I think I've talked to it on this show before too. You have to understand, you know, America. You know, Cornelius Vanderbilt was right when he said, let the common man be damned. You know, that's what's going on. Look, I want to tell people something. This country doesn't care one bit about the welfare of its people. Oh, they'll posture a lot. And if they give you something, they'll give you a little bit, not enough to really help, but enough to keep you going. Okay, you know, and then they'll try to cut it every chance they get. But the whole point is that the common man in the United States and in other countries too, this isn't just America, you know, the common man is, you know, dispensable. But we, you know, we can kill them on our streets. We don't get upset about, you know, killing 20 people a day, gunshots on the streets of America, but we get upset if 20 people get killed in the schoolroom. You know, that, I mean, okay, you know, it just looks worse when 20 people get killed in the schoolroom. But, you know, nobody cares 20 people get killed. Nobody cares that people die every day from homelessness, malnutrition. They're not even reported. The statistics aren't even kept. No one gives a hoot. So, you know, you take a person who's dispensable and you send him to Afghanistan or Iraq or anywhere else in the world. Okay, he's dispensable. That's why you sent him. You don't care if he comes back or not. You know, when he comes back, if he comes back, he's the same person he was before he went. He's still dispensable. So why are you going to take care of him? You didn't take care of him before he went. Why are you going to take care of him when he gets back? Dispensable people are dispensable. I mean, that's all there is to it.
John,
and like I said, it's not just America. It's Canada. It's Mexico. You know, it's, you know, Al-Qaeda. You know, it's Iraq and the, you know, it's the people in Egypt. That's just the way it is. Common people are dispensable. And they're going to be dispensable because governments don't exist for their benefit. Immanuel Kant was the only philosopher who saw through that. You know, He realized that morality consisted of just one thing. You had to treat human beings as ends in themselves, not as means to something, not as means to somebody else's end. But people throughout the world are nothing more than means to the ends that the people in power want to accomplish. That is all.
And I guess you can sum that up in one word, John: exploitation.
Yeah, of course. You know,
I mean, and that's exactly right, and it really is true across the world. Occasionally, where there are pockets of exceptions, the exceptions that prove the rule, but they're so rare, and you can go anywhere in the world.
Yeah, you know, they don't last long. You know, the Arab Spring started in Tunisia. Tunisia is just as bad today as it was the day that kid set himself on fire.
You know, it's worse today than it was when he set himself on fire. It literally is worse. And in Egypt, it's worse today than under Mubarak. And you could go across the region, the other places where there are outbreaks, and conditions didn't get better. They got worse. And you mentioned Ronald Reagan in America. I mean, conditions in America were never the way they should be. And then they started going downhill under Reagan, and George Herbert Walker Bush continued the Reagan agenda. Clinton was worse than Reagan and Bush. Bush Jr. was worse than either of them, and Obama is worse than all of them. And in 2016, when there'll be another president, that president, he or she, will be worse than all the predecessors. And that's the dirty system. That's the dirty game that gets covered up. And I hope people who listen to this program and read my articles and yours, John, understand that. But we need a lot more of us than just that small audience. We need the people who know this stuff to spread the word to others. Well, that's my only prescription for change, and I'll never live long enough to see it, but maybe someday.
You know, like I said in the last paragraph of my piece, I said, people, we are not making the world better. I said, soon even Satan will blanch at human brutality. You know, that's the way it is. The world is getting worse by the day. It's a lot worse today in this recession than it was in the 1930s depression.
John, it really is. Let me throw in one comment. It's been a while since I mentioned this, and I read this in a book some time ago, but there was a well-known, I guess he was a biologist, his name was Ernst Mayr, and he postulated that every species has a lifespan, and then maybe it'll disappear, some much longer than others. And he estimated maybe the human lifespan might approximate about 100,000 years. And this was I think he died in the mid-1990s. He said humans are approaching that lifespan. And then his comment was that the human species might turn out to be the only one ever to destroy itself. Others might go extinct, the dinosaurs or whatever, but no species ever goes out of its way to destroy itself. The human species is the exception, and it may turn out to be the one species one day that will end up destroying itself, and if it does, it'll take down a whole lot of others with it. Maybe the only ones that'll be left will be the roaches and the bacteria, something like that.
Yeah, like the Einstein quotation I put in my piece. He said he didn't know what weapons would be used to fight World War III, but he knew that World War IV would be fought with sticks and stones.
Oh, boy, I've used that quote, too. I have used that quote, too. So true.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah. And that, you know, what I said was that quote itself, the mere fact that observation would be made shows what depths the human race has sunk to.
It's a shocking indictment of a species that you could only conclude objectively that it's deeply flawed. It really is deeply flawed. And it's shameful, it's shocking. And it, as you say, John, it's getting worse and worse and worse. My goodness, the hour is over. Let me wish you a happy holiday.
Yeah.
Maybe someday we'll come on around this time of year and there really will be something to celebrate. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah, happy Santa Claus.
Thanks, John. I'll send you an email off air. Join us next week, Fridays, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Weekends at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Have a happy holiday.